The topic that's on everyone's mind in mining this year seems to be ESG, environment, social and governance issues, and its impact on the mining industry. If you look at last year, it was estimated that around $40 trillion worth of financial assets are being run with some kind of ESG mandate, which does beg the question, where and how does mining fit into all of this? Yesterday, Eskom CEO André de Ruyter said that the message of the climate envoys who visited South Africa in the run-up to COP26 in Scotland was that there is substantial concessional financing available to enable South Africa to pursue a just energy transition. He also indicated, however, that the initial focus would likely be on supporting Eskom to build the infrastructure required for decarbonisation, as well as to support vulnerable workers and communities, rather than to address Eskom's legacy debt. Well, to talk about how or maybe whether mining companies are embedding ESG into their corporate DNA and their strategy, I'm joined now by Tracy Davies, Executive Director of Just Share. Just Share works with local and international activists and responsible investors to advance sustainable finance and a just transition to a low-carbon economy in the country. Jane Mamets, who's a partner and director for sustainability and climate change at PwC, and Mzila Mtenjani, who's Exxaro's executive head for stakeholder affairs. Jane, just to set the scene here, if the sector, the mining sector, doesn't respond to ESG, do you see the sector becoming irrelevant and perhaps losing access to this large and growing source of ESG-mandated capital, or will private markets just step in?
Yeah, I think but the mining sector does need to respond to the ESG agenda. The mining sector is vast and it's big, and obviously the fossil fuels is under pressure at the moment, but there's a lot of mining minerals and stuff that's actually going to be part of the energy transition and the new economies we go forward. So they definitely have a place in our economy, but do need to respond to the ESG agenda and make sure that their impact is positive where it needs to be, and where there is obviously negative impact from mining, that it is minimised and managed and put right as you go forward. But overall, mining done responsibly can have a huge societal, economic and governance impact on our society and our economy.
I want to stay with you for a second longer though, Jane, on the point of where we see coal, for example, at the moment. I mean, the coal price has shot through the roof. We've seen the likes of Exxaro on the panel. Its share price was up over 10% yesterday. Thungela up over 100 rand. And the market seems to flow where the returns are flowing to, regardless of whether or not you've got an ESG mandate or not.
I'm not too sure just because someone's mining coal, they don't have an ESG mandate. A lot of the big mining companies are mining responsibly. Coal is a part of our energy mix, and we all know that is changing, and it's changing more rapidly every year as the new technology and the new pressures arise. But coal is part of our energy mix at the moment, and if it's done responsibly and properly, then it can still have that positive impact whilst we do that just transition, like you say, into the new energy, taking everyone along with us and dealing with some of the societal issues that will come with the extraction from coal. But we can't do that overnight. It has to be a process, a managed process, and a very integrated process over the coming decade or two. Mm.
So what I'm hearing you say is it's not dumping brown to become green. It's helping brown become greener over time. That's what the just transition is really about. Tracy, is that enough? Is that enough in a world that is rapidly going to exceed 1.5 degrees, heading to 2.6, and then to endure the catastrophic consequences of climate change as a result?
Well, I mean, I think you'll be unsurprised to hear that my answer to that is no, it's not enough. The phenomenon that you point to about the rising increase, the increase in prices of coal, the share prices of coal mining companies going up, has been kind of seized upon by some people in the investment industry to say, see, you were wrong about this. You know, this is ESG is not important. We don't need to worry about these things. And I think you're absolutely right that the money flows where the returns are. And that is kind of the fundamental premise of ESG should be about, are we making real world impacts, right? Not are we just making some glossy statements in an integrated report while continuing with business as usual. So I agree the transition is a transition. That's why it's a transition. It's not an overnight change. And it's going to be messy. You know, it's not a smooth path. And I think what we're seeing, there are very specific external factors in the global market that are driving those coal prices at the moment. And that's not going to last forever. And the thing that we need to just be far more honest about in this country is the fact that mining has enormous negative impacts on people and on the environment. And I don't think that anyone in power in South Africa, in the public or private sector, ever really fully admits that. And ESG integration should be about how we address those negative impacts, not just about checking whether you have a good ESG blurb in your integrated report, and then going, okay, great, I'll invest in you.
Yeah, those negative externalities that have been spoken about almost ad nauseum for the last two decades in the various COP conversations, and we saw yesterday a report around the emissions out of Sasol in particular, amongst the highest in the world, not amongst the highest in the world. And those are the facts on the ground, though. The other side is the S in ESG and the social good that comes from an industry that is a key export earner, Mzila, that employs a lot of people, and how we balance this equation and transition. As Exxaro, one of the biggest coal operators in Mpumalanga and Limpopo, how are you factoring all of this into your ESG strategy and into your corporate DNA?
Thanks for the question, Michael. And I think from what the panelists have said, one of the key takeaways is that one must take a long-term view around ESG, and particularly around the issue of climate. And whether you're looking at environmental issues or social issues, at the end of the day, combined, these are going to affect people. So a pollution of local water resources downstream is going to have an impact on people. A poor safety record is going to have a devastating impact on employees. So as a listed company, our ESG score is measured in terms of the FTSE Russell ESG index. And we ensure that not only through our integrated report, but in terms of our ongoing communication and reporting of our results, we highlight our ESG performance. And particularly emphasizing that this is not merely just a score issue, but the underlying activities that give effect to that score are also important. So reporting on our safety record and what it means for employee morale, on our health and programs in terms of employees, our employee engagement efforts, and then outside the farm fence, outside the lease area in terms of what we're doing in terms of community. And I think, as the point has been made, it's not perfect. It's work in progress. But I think what the objective and independent ESG analysts do is really keep us in check. And this is enabling a lot of this information to be available to a whole lot of other stakeholders, which then provides for us to be held accountable for our mining activity.
Mzila, I want to stay with you for a second longer, and I would like to get your sense of what the role of Exxaro, a big respected listed mining company, is in the just transition. Are you sitting down, are you thinking about what Mpumalanga, what Limpopo, what that region that has benefited from coal but also suffered because of the effects of coal mining is going to look like once the mines cease to operate?
That question is at the center of our strategy, which we shared with the market on the 20th of September through our Capital Markets Day. And we've entitled our strategy our Sustainable Growth and Impact Strategy, where we're making impact the essence as well as the outcome of our growth strategy. It starts off with recognizing that being a South African company, largely coal-based in terms of electricity, we have very good coal resources and reserves, which we need to ensure that we continue to mine responsibly and supply Eskom with the required coal to continue to generate electricity. I mean, we're sitting in an outlook where the electricity generation is going to be in deficit. We cannot afford to take decisions that will aggravate that situation. Having a strong coal base also provides for a good platform from the cash flows that it generated to then invest in future growth. But part of that growth needs to be low growth. And this is why you would have seen that we also spoke about us investing in renewables. Now, from a policy perspective, the concept of offsetting our emissions whilst we produce coal for Eskom and exports against the electricity generated from renewables is still not clear, but we can deem it that. And then we need to look beyond that in terms of where else growth will come from. But I think what is also critical about our strategy is considering that the migration from coal to other forms of growth and revenue is going to have a huge impact as these coal mines close down. And you quote Mpumalanga, and that's an area where we're giving a lot of attention in terms of how do we plan for what we call at Exxaro mineral succession planning. So the concept of mine closure is pretty well researched and embedded. But when a mine closes, it doesn't mean that people then migrate. People stay because they've established a livelihood for a long time. So the concept of mineral succession planning in terms of how do we leverage off the land, the water treatment plants that a lot of coal mining plants in Mpumalanga are building, how do we bring that together to perhaps rejuvenate an agricultural industry, and also an agricultural industry in a different form, looking at new concepts of agriculture that have come up, such as regenerative agriculture. And these begin to play a very important role in the whole concept of adaptation, because we have to accept that temperature increases will happen. How do we ensure that communities are resilient and able to adapt to a higher temperature environment? Because we're already doing a lot from a mitigation, and over time, we don't deny that coal will no longer be part of our energy input, and renewables will be. And how do we also ensure that those communities have access to renewable forms of energy, given the available technologies today?
And it's very much in line with what Minister Barbara Creasy was saying on the show last week about focusing a little bit more on adaptation, using the infrastructure that we already have at our disposal, the kind of pit-to-port infrastructure that has been established, and then maybe allied to some renewable energy around those areas to spark some kind of agricultural revolution. The fact remains, though, Jane, and when we come back to post-mine rehabilitation and closure in South Africa, I don't know of too many case studies that we have of successful post-mine rehabilitation and closure.
I think historically it's been a challenge because it's been very much a compliance type of closure approach around, you know, making the mine and it's the actual area sort of safe and putting back the environment. But that is changing at the moment, and you hear what Mzila says about what Exxaro are doing, what some other companies are doing, and really trying to make proper, strong communities around the mine that aren't dependent on the mine for the jobs and the society going forward. So I agree. Historically, it's been very compliance focused, but you do see a lot more thought going into this and a much more broader view of what closure should entail.
Tracy, I mean your thoughts. It sounds fantastic. Again, the execution, historically speaking, and we must be mindful that the sea change has been in the way corporates are now starting to engage with this in a lot more strategic, focused DNA type, granular detail, means that, you know, the history probably is not the best lens to look at. But history is not great in South Africa when it comes to post-mine rehabilitation.
No, and I also think it's important to remember that even though we're having this kind of explosion in ESG awareness and discussions and climate issues and all of that kind of thing, this is not a new discussion for the mining industry, right? I mean, I've been working in this space for 10 years, and the mining industry has always talked about responsible closure and looking after the communities around mines and not polluting the water. There's no accountability for that. There's no accountability at a government level. There's no accountability at a shareholder or investor level. And so I think that there's a huge danger around accountability, because we're hearing, extraordinary promises and plans and visions of the future from all sorts of business leaders, and it's great that they're thinking about that, and it's crucial that that we continue to have this discussion. But there's a very big gap in that discussion around accountability, because by the time we see the impact or otherwise of these plans and strategies, by the time we're able to judge whether they were successful, the current crop of CEOs who are making these promises will no longer be there. So how do we? That's the crucial issue, right? It's the problem with the net zero by 2050 commitments. You can say that now, knowing very well that you won't be around to take any responsibility for it if it doesn't happen.
Yeah, it's the next management team's responsibility. They're very easy to commit to something like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I have to say, with all due respect to Mzila, and I know that Exxaro is really kind of an outlier in this respect, in a good way. But I think that the impacts of mining on our environment and on mining affected communities in South Africa are so vast and so underappreciated It's all very well to say we're going to rehabilitate the mines we run now in a good way. What about the thousands and thousands of mines that have just been abandoned and left without any rehabilitation? How are we going to manage that? How are we going to manage the impacts that mining is currently having on our precious biodiversity resources, for example, on the West Coast, which is being torn up by mining as we speak? How are we going to manage those impacts and their knock-on effects on other industries like tourism? You know, so I think I think we're having a very narrow conversation about a couple of mining companies and how they manage rehabilitation, but actually this is a broad societal question that South Africa has utterly failed to engage with.
So with that then, Tracy, what is important is leadership. And back to your earlier point about Exxaro being an outlier on the positive side, that's certainly been my experience. They were one of the early supporters of a Water Energy Food Nexus conference that we put on over a decade ago, talking about the intersection of these issues and actually walking the talk, not just ticking a box in a nice integrated report. So, Mzila, is it incumbent, therefore, upon an Exxaro to take the lead here as the best of breed in SA mining in many ways, considering that government to a large extent has failed us and is absent in these conversations?
I think, you know, in the process of development of our strategy, we have come to that realization that I think in whatever way we do have to take a lead. And I think that's coming through in some of the work we're doing around the sustainable impact, which is the pillar of the sustainable growth and impact strategy. And I think to pick up on some of the points that have been made by Jane, for instance, the point around the focus on compliance in terms of closure is one that needs to change, because people don't move because there's no longer an economic activity. And so I think when we develop mines, we need to think of the impact during mining, but also the impact post-mining. And we need to design for that as mining executives. And this is where the point of leadership comes in as far as the role of foresight in leadership. And these are rehabilitative and regenerative plans that obviously will need to be updated every so often, such that by the time you get to mine closure, you actually have developed a new economic activity on the back of that mining activity. And where you have a cluster of mining companies working in proximity to one another, you can then bring all of those resources together to basically develop a new industry. This is how we got to Johannesburg and various other mining activities. So and then the other point is, you know, you made the point of $43 trillion of ESG capital becoming available. That for me is quite encouraging in terms of how the capital markets recognizing these non-modelable, if I can coin a word. You can't put an ESG risk in an Excel spreadsheet, but they recognize that those provide the context for investment and for good investment in the long term. And so that's another partnership that we're seeing coming into the equation, which is going to enable a new way of thinking around mine development and mine closure and ensuring that there's economic succession when mines close. And that will probably apply to many other businesses in different locations, but particularly for rural development. And the focus by our government on rural economic development, I think there's a huge opportunity in terms of the role that mining companies like Exxaro and its peers in the industry can play in terms of economic development in those areas.
It reminds me of an asset manager who joked with me the other day about launching a new ETF, and he's going to call it the bad ETF, betting alcohol and tobacco, because it does seem that, and to Tracy's earlier point, investment seems to flow where returns are highest. But back to this newfound commitment, and it really, you know, it is heartwarming to see capital markets, Jane, that are shifting. $43 trillion is not an insignificant sum of money here, but I want to come back to an earlier point about measurement. You know, if mining companies are committed to ESG, do we have a standard measure and model and framework to say, right, these are the ways we're going to measure you, because without measurement, you can't manage it, and there certainly can't be any accountability against any kinds of measurable defined commitments?
Agreed. So that measurement, monitoring, and even the reporting to those investors with those funds is an area that needs to really be focused on. You know, it's been mentioned a couple of times already about, you know, the NICE statements put in integrated reports and the like. You know, there is greenwashing, has been greenwashing going on, a lot of compliance attitude to integrated reports as well, where it's just seen as an annual reporting event and not actually a way of managing your business. So a lot does need to change in terms of embedding the ESG aspects into that business strategy, and actually just having a business strategy, not an ESG strategy, a business strategy that takes all of these factors into account, and then the right metrics, key performance areas, etc., to measure and monitor it, and then gets reported properly and holistically to the various stakeholders. So I think, yeah, it's an area that needs to improve. It's going a long way. ICMM has put out some new ways of tracking those performance metrics, as well specifically to the mining sector. They're just coming into play in the last year or so now, but it's absolutely crucial that, you know, things are measured, because what gets measured gets managed and gets improved. And we really do have to sort of focus on doing that as businesses, but then also how you communicate that to the market so people can truly assess performance, not how good a integrated report might look and feel, but actually what is the performance underlying the narrative in that report.
Yeah, speaking of narratives, I want to come back to you, Mzile. For those companies that are adhering to an ESG framework, who are making this part of their DNA and being sincere and authentic about it, how do you think they're communicating with the market, both with their allies and their naysayers? Because the industry is still viewed very much through that historical lens of paying almost lip service to ESG, but not really believing what they're talking about.
I mean, I think to a large extent, we tend to rely on our integrated report. And I think if a company has got its website properly designed, that's a very useful channel of communication and updating of information. And obviously, with the reporting according to, in terms of integrated report, there are various standards. You know, we started off with the triple bottom line of social, economic, and environment. And then we had the six capitals. Now we now have the SDGs. And so and then you have the different ESG analysts that also come with their own angles in terms of areas of focus. And I think this is also adding to the confusion in terms of what one should report on. I mean, we've done an analysis where we realized we've been followed by at least 10 ESG analytics companies who actually engage us assertively for information. But you do have to create a framework for yourself in terms of what makes sense. But I want to take a step back and say, I think there's a lot of external frameworks and standards that are available that we can use. And I think they probably, in terms of how you adopt, you know, they could lend themselves to the kind of criticism that is being expressed here. What I've observed is that it actually needs to start from inside the organization. And from an Exxaro perspective, you know, the board has a very important role to play. And I want to pick up on the point you made earlier around leadership from within the organization, the role of the board in terms of holding itself and holding the management accountable and putting in place the necessary measures given the understanding of what the purpose of the organization is and what the expected outcomes are from the operations. And that's what has, I think, enabled Exxaro to be able to perform the way that it has. And we've gone further as a company to establish what we call an Exxaro leadership way. And if you read that, it talks to issues of purpose and responsibility, and more importantly, stakeholder management and accountability. Recognizing that there's a context within which we operate, we are aware of the impact that we have on society and the need for society to respond to that. And this is how the interaction takes place between the company and its external environment. And I think through the stakeholder management, we've had very, very constructive exchange with shareholders around what they want to see management being measured on. And this is where we're seeing some of these ESG measures coming into place, such that there's clear accountability through shareholders to the rest of society in terms of our performance on ESG and how we're being measured and therefore how we're being remunerated. But I think it's something that needs to start from inside in terms of the guiding philosophies that enable the company to make its decisions and take its actions.
So Thanks, Mzila, I think for some great insights into the way you're approaching it at Exxaro. Tracy, just as we've got a minute and a half left, are you confident that this ESG conversation is going to move the needle, that we're going to have the kinds of impacts that those people who analyse ESG want? And what do you see as the future for South Africa's mining industry in a low-carbon economy? How can it grasp the nettle?
I think that there is promise for this new wave of interest and concern about ESG if we focus, as I said before, on whether it is having impacts on the ground, real-world impacts, not just impacts in financial statements and annual reports. So I think we need a lot more honesty about what's happening on the ground. The future is, as Jane said, I mean, mining is it's crucial to human existence, and it will be in a future low-carbon economy, as it is and has been in a fossil fuel-based economy. But I think, you know, we have a very small window of time now to make that transition. And so it's the urgency that's important now. We have to make these decisions, and we have to make them fast, and we have to implement them fast. And the mining industry cannot operate as an isolated sector in our economy. It has to engage in what I would say in a much more proactive way on these issues with government and with its other stakeholders, if we're actually going to achieve the kind of future that everyone is saying they want.
Well, it is certainly encouraging from my vantage point just to see how it's become a backwater issue to the very central conversation piece of this year's Johannesburg Mining Indaba. Thank you very much, Joburg Mining Indaba, I should say. Tracy Davies, Jeshe Executive Director, who is joined by Jane Mamet, Partner and Director of Sustainability and Climate Change at PwC, and Mzila Mtinjani, Exxaro's Executive Head for Stakeholder Affairs.